Welcome to AP Psych!
Okay, and welcome back, everybody. We are in Unit 8
slash 9. Unit 8 in our chronological order, Unit 9 in the Psych CED.
Exactly, or if you're following along with College Board. So this is all about social psychology. Really exciting stuff.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to start with day one. Attribution is where we're going to begin. So Mrs. Snyder.
Ooh, got all fancy business. So what is attribution in general? This is inferences on why people do things. So why is she doing that? What is her motivation or their motivation? This is really based on our perceptions and schemas. So attribution is when you don't actually have the right answer. You might not have the right answer. You're perceiving it about someone else.
Exactly. So with attribution comes attribution theory. This is where we have situational attribution and dispositional attribution. So situational is when you blame or credit a situation with a causing behavior. For example, if somebody talks a lot, it's because maybe they are excited about whatever it is that you're talking about. For example, if you talk to Ms. Snyder about the Pittsburgh Penguins, she's going to get really excited about it. So that would be situational. Whereas dispositional attribution is when you blame or credit relatively permanent trait of the person. So, for example, if somebody talks a lot, it might be because they're outgoing. That would be dispositional. Another example would be if I always look mad, maybe I'm just like an angry person. That would be dispositional. So it can be positive or negative. I think a lot of people just think it's only negative, but it can be positive.
Yeah, there can definitely be positive things. And we see that a lot when we're thinking about ourselves. And we'll look at this with the fundamental attribution error. When we're looking at ourselves, we tend to give those positive qualities a dispositional attribution. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's just who I am. I'm just amazing. Which self-confidence is great. Don't get me wrong.
I'm an athletic specimen.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's move on to fundamental attribution error. This is where you attribute a behavior to internal factors. So kind of like what Ms. Snyder was saying, like you're looking over or overlooking other things like the situation or your own attitude. And it's basically when you attribute to dispositional attribution, but not necessarily situational. Do you have a better way? I feel like that's like a really textbooky definition or like way of explaining it.
Yeah. So the way that I just talked about it was looking at ourselves. When we look at other people, instead of kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt of, oh, maybe they're having a bad day. I like to think of if someone cuts you off in traffic, instead of, oh, maybe they're really in a rush, they had a bad day, maybe someone just cut them off. The automatic thought is, they're a terrible driver, you suck, whatever. That's the fundamental attribution error. You overlook any other factors of what they're like driving or what situation they're in and only attribute it to who they are as a person.
I like that example because I think a lot of us can relate to that.
Yes.
So do you want to go over some effects of fundamental attribution? I feel like your example did a really good job of that.
Let's leave it there. I think some of these can get a little bit more confusing. Okay. So, all good. Yeah. So when we combine those, there's a really nice chart in our day one slides on the fundamental. Oh, I can't. I don't know.
Fundamental attribution.
There you go. When behavior was good, when we're looking at the behavior of ourselves or the behavior of others. Mm-hmm. So when it's a positive thing, we want. And it's about ourselves. we want it to, we think of it as dispositional. I earned it because of who I am. I'm a hard worker. But when someone else does something good, like let's say your friend beats you in a race you've been training for forever, they get an A on a test that you get a C, you might think that you might attribute it to situational factors. Say, like, it's not fair. I could do it too if only I had 10 hours a day to study, or if I had worked out with that trainer. Maybe they were just lucky. You're attributing it to the situation beyond just their disposition or ability.
Exactly. Well, whereas if the behavior is bad, then for yourself, if you did something bad, then you would contribute it as situational. Like, oh, it's not fair. And it's not my fault that I, you know, didn't clean my room because I had to go out and help my friend who was having such a hard time. Do you have another example? Or
The teacher made the test so hard. It's usually like, it's not my fault. It's not fair. Not fair is what I usually go towards. But yeah, that's, you're also in that case being like, I'm a good person.
Mm-hmm. I had a friend once that got caught sneaking out, which you should not do, by the way, for so many different reasons. And she got caught and her parents asked, like, well, you've never done anything like this before. Why would you do it? She said, it's not my fault because I was going to meet somebody who's having such a hard time in their life right now and they needed, like, my support.
They needed the support at, like, 2 a.m.?
Yeah.
Not it. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, you didn't end well for her.
I like, the anxiety in the middle of the day is high enough. I do not need to add in sneaking out. I have never needed to do that. Like,
me neither.
Terrifies me.
Same. But for the behavior of others, it would be dispositional. Oh, it was their fault because they are a bad person if they did something bad. Like your driving example. Oh, they cut me off because they're an awful human being. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, I do kind of love these.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
So the cognitive tricks our mind uses. Remember, our brain tries to think quickly. It's going to try and get us to process through things quickly. Mm-hmm. But this disrupts information for us, and so it doesn't always get us to the right conclusion. So we have the self-fulfilling prophecy here. It says, if you attribute your behavior to situational factors, you might not try, then you won't succeed, but then you blame the situation for being unfair, mm-hmm. not your lack of preparation. Mm-hmm. So the one I usually think of with this is, like, as a student. If you think, and especially, I know it's easy, especially it was easy at the beginning of the year towards our earlier units to say with psych, these tests are so hard, I'm never going to do well on them, so I might as well not study. Well, even as the tests get a little easier, maybe the content gets a little easier to work with, if you don't study, then you won't succeed, you won't do well, and then you can say, see, I told you, the tests are so hard. And so you're fulfilling the prophecy of, I'm going to fail the test mm-hmm. by not doing anything.
Yeah. I usually contribute it to math. Like, oh, I'm always bad at math, I'm not going to do well in this new math class that I'm in, so I don't try. And then I do bad, and then I say, oh, it's because I'm just not good at math. It's like, no, it's because you didn't try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing with shooting a free throw for me right now.
No.
Or ever.
Okay.
Yeah. Can't do it.
Oh, I can't either. So it's okay.
You're in good. We got to get Coach Thompson.
I do not. You can. That's on you. Okay. A false conscious
consensus.
Thank you. Oh, consensus effect. The false consensus effect is when you believe that lots of people think the way that we do, which allows us to keep using heuristics and tricks to continue in ways that benefit us. So I had a good example and now I can't think of it. An example of this would be, I lost it. It was, I had it like,
did you think if you just started it?
I fully did. Or I thought that you would finish it. I was waiting. I was waiting for you.
Okay. Well, we'll let that one hang in the air for a minute.
Yeah.
Self-serving bias is when a person automatically and unconsciously gives themselves the benefit of the doubt or spins a certain way to make themselves look good. So this goes along with that fundamental attribution error of, like, if you do something good, you're going to look at it with a situational perspective. Basically, our minds, our cognitive ideas just want us to look good to ourselves. So we're going to do something, spin a tale, tell a story that makes ourselves look the best in this.
Yeah. So an example of the false consensus effect would be if you believe that all people think that saving the environment is important because that's how you feel. So that would be an example.
Gotcha.
So like, oh, everybody must recycle because I recycle, everybody else must recycle too. And then you find out that others don't.
Others don't. Yeah. Others that are a lot closer to you than you think.
The spider is affected by this personally.
I am. I didn't even realize.
All right. Confirmation bias. We've talked about confirmation bias before, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. I think of politics. We've given that example. I think I also use the example of, like, pugs. Like, I love pugs, so, like, I'm going to follow, like, other people online who like pugs, and yeah. I'm just going to confirm that, like, pugs are the best kind of dogs. But you kind of do that. A lot of people do that with politics, too. So you kind of, like, go towards people and subscribe to sources that confirm your own opinion instead of seeking either other opinions or facts if you're bringing in lies.
Right.
Yeah. Self-concept.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. So how do we define ourselves? Morality is usually viewed as the central part of the self-concept. As we mature, that becomes more and more the case. Instead of, so you'd be more likely to say something like, I really care about the environment, or I am believe in this or that, as opposed to I'm blonde, brunette, whatever. But in different situations, different aspects of yourself will be highlighted in your mind. So when you're out at a party, you might say you're more extroverted, if you are extroverted. But when you're at a funeral, or if you're in mass or a service, maybe a movie theater somewhere that you have to be quiet, you might not be thinking about, like, oh, I'm talkative or I'm outgoing, because that's not really a place where you're doing that.
Mm-hmm. With cultural differences, again, we've already talked about this. There is cultural differences between Western nations and Eastern nations. So in the West, we are more independent and we view our own selves, your own position, your own motive. Whereas in the East, it's more interdependent. We have more of like a connection to family, work, organizations like religions. And it's more like within your culture and within your group. So it's more like with other people where you can define yourself.
Differences between gender. Psychologically, men and women are much more similar than different.
Mm-hmm.
But there are relative differences in the way women and men define themselves in the United States. So women have a greater sense of relational interdependence than men. But men more think of collective interdependence. So they focus on their memberships in large groups. So think about, again, this is just in general, mm-hmm. but think about the idea that women might talk about their best friends, or like their best friends in their sorority or on their team. And men might be more likely to just say, oh yeah, I play football. Oh yeah, I'm in Phi Del. Oh yeah, just all, like, the entire large group, as opposed to individual friendships that they have within that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so attitude. You got attitude, Miss Snyder?
You know what? Sometimes. It's gotten a lot better since I was in high school.
Oh, that's good. I have attitude with Mr. Constantine.
That's fair. No, I think most of my tude comes out with Mr. Welchel. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, mine too. Yeah. Yeah, it's these male teachers.
These male teachers.
Really getting us with our attitudes. Yeah. They deserve it, honestly.
A little bit. Not, don't feel bad.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. All right, so an attitude is a feeling that is influenced by our beliefs that predispose our reactions to objects, people, and events. So if we believe that somebody is threatening us, then we may feel fear and anger towards that person and act defensively. Another example would be if Mr. Welchel or Mr. Constantine are really sarcastic towards us, we are going to defend ourselves and snap back at them, which we do every day.
Feel that they are being rude or sarcastic, then we are going to act defensively.
That was rude? Oh, you snapped at somebody.
A little rude.
Miss Snyder's toot is out, you guys.
So the elaboration likelihood model, the theory here is based on how much a person thinks about the relevant information in a persuasive argument. So has there been a time when you were quickly persuaded by flash and grammar? Glamour, not grammar. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
You're turning into me. I'm so proud.
So did you really know the process of how we come to want the new status symbol, or do we really just know that we want it? The idea here is that we just know we want it. So it's the process of forming an attitude and of being persuaded that is emotional and unconscious. I know I've said to my class, I am unbelievably persuaded by podcast ads, especially from my one podcast, because they're funny and it's quick. And that's why I'm like, probably should be a brand ambassador for Liquid IV because I love it so much. But like when I first start telling people like, oh, have you heard about kitty litter, like pretty litter, like I don't own a cat, I haven't really thought about why people should get it or not, but I'm like, oh, they talk fast and it was funny, get it, you know. That's the elaboration likelihood model.
So if we start adding ads, are you just going to like only pick the ones that you are like extremely influenced by, or are you just going to like work towards like influencing others?
I guess I need to work towards influencing others. Probably. Because like I can talk about Liquid IV as much as I want. You still don't like putting something in.
Well, that's just like a personal thing.
I know.
I don't like, I like water in my water. I don't like other things in my water. Anyway, so here are some different ways that you can try and persuade me.
Okay.
There's central route to persuasion and peripheral route to persuasion. Would you like to talk about? Just seemed really excited. I don't want to take it away.
Yeah, so the central route to persuasion is using facts to persuade someone. This is like the legal system. So this is two lawyers standing up, going at each other. These are the facts. This is a lot of decisions involving money as well, like where is this money going to go? What are the benefits? Pros, cons list is central route as well. High levels of elaboration, so you're really thinking about it, requires time to process, and it's just really the facts. So like for Liquid IV, three-time hydration multiplier.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So you need substantially less water.
Yes.
It tastes good.
That's fine.
That's peripheral. Yeah. Three times. It has electrolytes for you. Yeah. It's really good when you're exercising. Mm-hmm. And the guy on the podcast that I listened to said he's like good for planes, like when you have to travel.
That makes sense. Yeah, because you get dehydrated. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really great uses for it. That's central use. Just using central route. Just using facts.
But Pedialyte does the same thing.
Pedialyte is so gross.
Okay, I will say that the last time I think it was when I got one of my boosters, I don't know, one of the vaccine, I don't know what I got, but, and I drank like a whole bottle of Pedialyte, and as I was drinking it, it was very nostalgic because I used to drink it as a kid, and then I realized like, this is thick.
It's syrup. You are drinking straight syrup.
And I started to understand what you were talking about. So I get it.
Other fact, does not taste like syrup.
Okay. Well, there you go. So that is a fact.
There you go.
Now, peripheral route to persuasion is definitely more emotion. And this isn't necessarily emotional. Let me finish my thought. Using more emotion to persuade somebody. So, like, a funny and great advertisement that you hear in a podcast would be peripheral. Political ads that might make you angry. Again, that would also go back to confirmation bias as well. Low level of elaboration and helps you make quick decisions. So for the liquid IV example, mm-hmm. the strawberry flavor is disgusting. Okay, well, and so that's going to, like, if I already know what it tastes like, then when you try and tell me, like, oh, you should drink liquid IV, when you, and then I'm going to be like, ew, no, I already made my decision. I've already tasted it and it doesn't taste good. So do I need to try a different flavor? Probably. Have I?
No. Okay. Strawberry and grape are medicine flavors. Do not get those flavors. Okay. So here's the deal. I'm sitting here telling you to try liquid IV. You know, might not be super persuasive. Central Root didn't work. But let's say we throw Paul Rudd into a commercial. Sexiest man alive. Or of the year. Whatever it is. That might give you the halo effect.
I was wondering where you were going with this. That was fantastic.
I got that transition down.
You got this. Keep going.
Just when a person's attractiveness or their personality positively affects our judgment of them or something that they're trying to promote. So the halo effect is a peripheral route to persuasion that we don't even really notice. But think of every cologne or perfume ad that you've watched and thought, what in the world is going on? They're just showing you attractive people using something. And subconsciously, your brain thinks, I could be that attractive if I use that.
Mm-hmm. I like the cologne example.
Because they're so weird.
So strange. Like, who would want to buy something when people are just, like, floating in the air? I don't know.
And sometimes anyway. They're a horse. It's just...
Yeah. I get it. But yeah, you're right. They try and use, like, what society would deem as, like, attractive people.
Yeah.
So, okay. I like it. Okay. So, actions can affect your attitudes, and your attitudes can affect your actions. Great example that we definitely need to know of actions affecting our attitudes is the Zimbardo Stanford Prison Experiment. If you did not pay attention to this. I don't know what you were doing. This was wild. But Philip Zimbardo in the early 70s basically got a group of people, 24 men, who half of them were the prisoner of a fake prison. The other half were the guards of this fake prison. And he became the warden of this fake prison. It was supposed to go on for 2 weeks. I think it went on for like 6 days or something like that.
Yep. And within 36 hours, someone had to be taken out because they had a mental breakdown.
It didn't end well, to say the least. So if you are like, what are you talking about? You need to, one, pay more attention in class. And two, go on to day one, slide 23. There's a video that explains it all. Also know that this is deemed extremely unethical. There's no... I mean, it's not a proper experiment because there's no IV, there's no control group, there's no placebo. It didn't use the double blind technique. They did not harm people. They 100% harmed people. It says do no harm, and then I just said it, and then I had to add another not to it. It doesn't matter.
Did not harm.
No integrity. Zimbardo was in the experiment himself, which you're not supposed to do. So it was just no good overall. Highly suggest you go ahead and check that out. Oh, I don't know why I did that. There we go.
This is also one of my favorite things.
I love the foot in the door phenomenon.
Love the foot in the door phenomenon. So this is the idea that people will agree to minor requests, and then because they've agreed to that smaller one, they'll keep agreeing to larger requests. Mm-hmm. So once you do something once, it becomes easier to do it again. We had an example here that people were asked to put a huge drive carefully sign on their front lawn. Think about like the TVs in our room, like that big of a drive carefully sign in your front lawn. Only 17% of people said yes. Later, they asked a different group of people, would they put a 3-inch be safe driver sign in their yard? 96% said yes. Now, when they ask, after they ask these 96%, and they agreed to a 3-inch sign, they went back to those same people and asked, now would they allow a huge drive carefully sign, a sign as big as our TV? And 76% said yes, mm-hmm. compared to 17 who originally said yes. This is fully the foot in the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, basically, just to summarize your example, if you start out small with a request and then you ask for more and more, people are more likely to do it. Another example, would you say, like, the Holocaust would be an example? So, like, if Hitler came in to be the leader of Germany and said, okay, we're just going to annihilate a whole population of people, everybody would be like, bro, calm down. So what he did instead was he started out small, and he started out like segregating them, you know, boycotting them, and then it got worse and worse and worse until we got to the death camps. So just like start out with a small request, and that's a really dramatic example, but an example nonetheless. So start out with a small request, and then you can ask for more and more and more over time.
Yeah. Oh, which also leads to the cognitive dissonance theory, which is, I just love social psych. So this is Leon Festinger, was the psychologist that looked into this. And this is an awareness when our actions and our attitudes are not in agreement. They're clashing. We've got tension. You want to end the tension so you can either change your attitude or beliefs, or you can change your actions. But what we've talked about and learned is that sometimes changing your actions, especially if it's an addiction, is very difficult. So sometimes this leads to a level of hypocrisy, or a lot of times it leads to rationalization. Mm-hmm. So ways to decrease the tension for cognitive dissonance, like I said, you could change the actions, which is really difficult, or you could change your attitude. Now, one that I think about with this, an example I think about with this a lot, is with smoking. What's the attitude? Is there any information that tells us that smoking is anything but bad for you? No. We all have a set, smoking is bad, not good. But when we look at the actions, people still smoke. Vaping has become incredibly popular. People do that.
Which is also bad for you.
Which is also for, yes, let's clarify that. So, which do you change? Do you stop vaping or smoking? Or do you change your belief that this is really bad for me and could harm me? Most of the time, people choose to change. The people that are vaping or smoking choose to change the attitude, mm-hmm. and rationalize it too. Well, it helps me with stress, or it does this or that, in a defense mechanism, mm-hmm. sort of way.
Yeah, I like it. I like that example a lot. So that was just day one. We're going to go over day two and day four in the next episode, part two. So stay tuned for that, and we'll see you later.
See you later.